Does that work for you?
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I have the pleasure to introduce Sven Luther. He's a member of the Debian kernel team, and he's very active with the PowerPC port. And he's going to be telling us today about what's going to happen to the Debian installer and the kernel, Lenny and beyond. Lenny is what we will release exactly 18 months after it.
24.
Actually, I am not going to say what will happen. We will make proposition of what could happen, and we can discuss later between you and me, and later inside the Debian kernel team and the other affected teams. Just one moment. So, like Sain, we wait for it to start. It's already. So I will start the presentation soon when we have the presentation software loaded.
No rush.
So like I said before, this is more a reflection talks about what could happen. I will first give a history of what happened since shortly before the release of Sarge, when Herbert Tsu left the Debian kernel maintenance, and what was the plan, what we did achieve in all these months or years, and what we fight to achieve, and the work which is still ahead, and also speak about the opportunities which the new developments in the upstream kernel can bring to Debian or to other distributions compared to what was before. It's a bit slow, but that's the FE keyboard, which you might have seen on the boot. It's a 1400 MHz CPU with 128 MB of RAM only, so open office, it's a bit hungry, and it takes some time to... But it works. So like I said, it's a reflection about the Debian kernel in many and beyond, and in its interaction between the kernel team and the other teams which are affected by the kernel. So quickly, here is the plan of the presentation. We will present first the history, the problems we had with the situation, the objective we had for things to do, what we achieved up to today, what is still to be done, and new ideas that come along the way. So before, Herbert Tsu was the maintainer of the source package, the Linux source package. He also maintained the x86 architecture, the kernel for the x86 architecture, and there was for each architecture a different kernel maintainer. He was at that time the PowerPC maintainer together with Jens Schmelzing. There was someone for Spark, someone for M68K, someone for Alpha, etc. This was problematic because there was not a lot of communication between Herbert Tsu and the individual kernel maintainers. That was the first problem. The second problem, each architecture were upgrading the kernel as the maintainer at time, but also independence of the upstream development for each architecture. For example, on PowerPC, one example was the APUS, the PowerPC Amigas. They were lagging one or two versions behind the normal patches, and there were two kernel packages, so it took a lot of time. So we released with different kernel versions for each architecture, or even sub-architectures, which means for the version before Sarge was Potato, we had something like 10 or more Woody. So for Woody, we had various different, I also did a security update for PowerPC kernel for Potato. So we had various, some were 2.2 kernels, some 2.4, 2.17, 2.4, 2.18. Etc. It was very problematic. And the security team, if there was a security upload, they fixed it for x86 first, and then they said, oh, there is also this one. So they had to backport the patch that was done for the x86 kernel for the older kernel source, and this 3, 4, 5 more times. It was problematic, it took time, and it has an impact on security because they like to announce all the security appliances at the same time. So what happened is that at the start of 2005, I think it was Herbert Tsu left Debian over some dispute with, I don't say the deity, but it's not, I don't remember who it was exactly, but it was over the name of Taiwan. So the installer, he was from China, so he didn't like Taiwan to be called Taiwan, and there was some ugly dispute. He left suddenly, leaving us without a kernel maintainer. So what happened? Martin Nischmeyer was Debian leader at that time, and he contacted a certain number of people from the upstream kernel community and asked them to form a team which would maintain the kernel. At first, it was a bit chaotic because he asked outside kernel maintainers from the upstream community, but without really communicating with the individual port maintainers from each architecture. So there was a bit of a chaotic start, but it ended forming a working team, which I believe at the time of Helsinki DevConf in 2005 was one of a model of cooperation and good work. So the problem we had in the situation before, I repeat myself a bit, we have many maintainers and packages which made the upgrades long and difficult because Herbert Tsu made a new version, then someone, for example, PowerPC maintainer noticed that, he made the upgrade, and then someone was not paying attention, didn't make it, it took time, there were different versions, it was very problematic. For Debian installer, what it means is that when there was an upgrade of a kernel, it took a lot of time for all architectures to sync. 1 month and more was the time it took. It was a lot of work for the Debian installer people to just check what was happening, which maintainer, which package was to upgrade, which had to migrate to testing, etc. It was very time consuming. So one of the goals we had for, I will go into that after. So it was, there was also no binary build of out of three modules. There was module blah 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 source, and you had to build it yourself, kernel package or module assistant or something else. And the Debian kernels were known. There are a lot of people who were not using the Debian kernels because they were 6 months, 1 year outdated. So that was a major problem in perception and image also. There were many Debian-specific patches, often from Herbert Tsu himself, some of dubious quality, which caused problems years later. Also. And there were, at this time it was not very apparent, but there were and still are some non-free firmware in the kernel. The firmware blobs, which are in the kernel, licensed on the GPL, making the whole kernel non-distributable. That's the main problem. I may have missed some, but that's what was it. So what we wanted to do is diminish the workload needed to work on the kernel, have to update the Debian kernel, and don't lag so much with relation to upstream. and staying close sync with them. So that's basically what we wanted, is to we decide that in order to not have so much need of work to maintain the Debian kernel, we will be in close synchronization with the upstream kernel, accepting only patches, the minimum patches, often only backports or patches which are quality, able to go upstream. And be able to release fast and not 6 months after an upstream release, maybe. And then the second biggest point was the ability to build a single package which will build all architectures. And at that time, Ubuntu was already doing something like this. At that time, we were working more closely with Ubuntu than we do now, because afterward they didn't want to work with us anymore, or they did their own stuff. Also, we wanted to start building pre-built modules for the main kernels, so people will not be needed to build and can just install the binary modules. We wanted to solve the non-freeing issue and, in general, diminish the time needed for the kernel to be updated, in particular for security habit changes and the impact it has on out-of-tree modules and Debian installer. So what did we achieve up to now? We achieved to have a single kernel for package for every architecture, so every arch is in sync with regard to the kernel, including 68K and other slower evolving kernels. We have only one single version of the kernel and not five or more like we had before, which is much easier for support and later for security support for the stable security team. For Sarge, we still had two versions, one for 2.4, one for 2.6. In Edge, we dropped 2.4 and have only one kernel version. As the one high point we achieved was in 2.6.14, we managed to upload the Debian kernel the same day it was released upstream for all architectures built at the same time, except 68K, took a little bit longer. It didn't happen exactly. There was some delay caused by new handling, but mostly we managed to do it the same day, which was a huge, huge change with relation to before. So we have a single out-of-tree module package also, which allowed to have pre-built binaries. We cleaned up the old style patches from the Herbert-Sue area, and they are now very close to the upstream kernel, and the politic of accepting only patches which are of upstream quality and often backwards. Also, on the non-free firmware front, we worked with hardware manufacturers like Broadcom, where they told us, never they will hear you, you lose time. Well, I personally, and Anna Salomon later with me, contacted Broadcom, contacted QLogic and some other, I think. We had discussion with them, and they changed their license. It was not becoming a free one, but at least it was making the kernel code releasable. So we have also some failure, the sense that things that could have been working differently or which didn't happen like or didn't yet happen. So one of the big problems which happened in August last year was the huge mess about the kernel, the non-free firmware. The kernel team was preparing a GR proposal to solve it nicely, and there was some disagreement, and Steve Langazek decided to do his stuff alone, which prompted others to do counter proposals, and it was a huge mess. The resulting GR vote is today not respected by the kernel team and not respected by the RMs. I think personally that there was some, how to say, the confusion in the way the GR was done, which made you people who wanted think something else that was really voted in the end. And of today, if we are going to be true to the GR, we have to remove the TG3 soft firmware, which currently are in the firmware. Okay, then there is some problem with reprocessing. Each time one architecture uploads a new version, a bit change, we need to do new processing. It's a bit problematic. It's less problematic today than it used to be, because the FTP master team is more responsive to this kind of thing than in older days. We had also some problem in case of kernel freeze for DI release candidates. when you have only one version and it's frozen for DI, we cannot easily, well, there is a new upstream, we will package it. It's not easily possible if you have only one kernel package. And the last point is, so no easy way to upgrade kernel ABI and version for security builds. We'll go into that later. Oh, I remember what I wanted to say. So the plan is we have a 2 years lifetime for the Debian releases. So basically, in 2 years, the hardware changes a lot. There is need for a newer kernel, for a lot of hardware support for newer hardware. So we want to be able to do a half-life of the next release kernel upgrade, for example. And also the custom distribution has happened in a post which was, I wanted to cite it, but I have no internet. I wanted to quote it. There was the demand from the custom, the derivative distribution that they want to change. They have some demand on newer kernels that we cannot provide today. So what needs to be brought on? So we have progress to make. There are three important points. And here it comes with my interpretation, and I know that people, including people from the Debian installer team, but maybe others, are not in accord with me on this point, but I wanted to make this occasion also something so we can discuss and maybe evolve each other in each other direction and make progress this way. So one is to continue the work. So just like quick going back, right now we have one single kernel package. So we have not this mess where there was one kernel source and then one per architecture and each people which do it separately, and it takes time and coordination and a lot of work we don't want to do. We have one kernel package, we make change, we upload it, the auto builder build it for each architecture. For slow architecture maybe someone does it, but there is coordination, it happens quickly. We manage to make a place 1 day after the stream release. But we wanted to go farther than that into the Debian installer realm and have the Debian installer modules also well profit from that and not be in the old situation where there were thousands of maintainers, not thousands, but 10 or more, each uploading with their time and it taking long, which was a problem. There was resistance from the DE team to do that. Lately they have managed to auto-build in case of minor upgrades, all the versions, so there is some improvement, but there is still a way to do. The problem with the non-free firmware is similar, it's equally related to the kernel team, but also the Debian installer. If you remove the firmware from the tree, we have to be able to handle firmware, to load firmware, or to have a non-free version of the Debian installer, or something like that, which is not possible actually. And what we'll discuss later will also help with that. And so also for the out of three modules, there are still some modules which are not out of reach. So many of them concern the Debian installer team also. I don't know if there is someone from the Debian installer team here. I think not, it's a shame, but we'll do that. So besides these needs inside Debian, there are also opportunities which come to us from the upstream development. There are two important improvements which help us in this concern and achieve solution. The first one is there is movement happening upstream, conscience over the non-free firmware issue, and the firmware loading infrastructure which allows to remove the firmware, the non-free firmware in binary blobs from the kernel source and have them loaded from user land. One example is the QLogic drivers, they already fully moved to that. And I think that the input of the Debian kernel team to QLogic, which happened in end of 2005, so some time ago, but it was good to make them bring conscience to that. The second important thing is the advent of initramfs, which has replaced initrd. And we have another slide which goes into this. So initramfs, what is it? Some of you are familiar with initram disks. So it's a RAM disk where which was of different kinds, an extended tool, or a compressed loop, or various versions of file system which were in CSD RAM disk, which are copied which are loaded with the kernel before the file system is mounted and everything else. It worked, it was used a lot, but the kernel developers have created a new system called initdrmfs, which solved many problems from the kernel side and give us many opportunities to solve many of the problems we have encountered over the years. So it replaced the initram disk infrastructure. It is loaded much earlier by the kernel, so you can do a lot of stuff like loading firmware before the drivers are loaded. It's composed of a compressed CPIO archive, so it's just sort of copied inside an archive. So we can do incremental build of the RAM disk. So we put some stuff in it, and then we need to add files, we add them, and so on. And the fourth important point is we can have a kernel, the VM Linux, and the RAM disk, we just cut it at the back of the kernel, and will be automatically be recognized with the kernel. Or have a separate RAM disk file, which will be loaded with the bootloader. So that is, I think, what most I will talk here, because it brings us opportunities which was not possible before and solve our problems. So plan for the future, what I just said, so I pass this slide. So another important point is that it concerns many areas in Debian, most of them, three of them. The first is, the kernel package itself, the kernel team, the maintainers of the out-of-tree modules. The out-of-tree modules are modules which are not in the kernel, but coming from other sources. And also it handles the non-free firmware. The first point is the realm of the Debian kernel team and associated module maintainers. It also, not really up to now, but in the plans I have, it concerns the Debian archive and the FTP master. I don't know if there are FTP master here. No. So, because the proposals I make have some influence of that, and we will see that later. And it concerns the way Debian installer is handling kernels, and so it concerns also the Debian team, installer team. It's a shame nobody of them is here today. So the idea we have will allow for building different kernel versions to stay in the archive. Why we do that? It seems like a regression compared to what we had before. It's guessed we go to a single version, then we will go to have many different versions. It will allow for, we do that because in the case of freeze and stabilization or in experimental kernels, it's easier to do it like that. Also, in the case of the Debian installer, when there is a RC release candidate or a beta or something, they have a problem that the kernel move. When they prepare the next one, they are forced to break the old one in order to introduce the new kernel, preparing for the new one. It's a bit problematic. And we will pass on the second point. And the aim of this whole team is to make things easier for the whole problems. And in case of there is a ABI breaking kernel upgrade, for example, there is a security patch which breaks the ABI kernel, which means we have to rebuild all the modules, we have to rebuild the Debian installer. It's problematic, and we want to achieve only a few days, single day if possible, let's say 2-3 days, before we can make an upgrade of the kernel. Today it takes still a few weeks, as could be seen with the problem the kernel team and the release managers and the Debian installer team had, for example, for the latest round of kernel upgrades, which delayed the Edge release for a few weeks, maybe months. So, and then you can see that, or it's a bit small.
It's okay.
So there are two ideas here. The first is that with the initramfs achievement, what we want to do is we say the initramfs, we can build it incrementally. So the Debian installer image, it has, right now, there is one image per netboot, per CD-ROM, per installation target. Then this image, it contains some Debian installer UDEPS components, but it contains also the kernel image for the flavor. That means for an architecture like, let's say, PowerPC, which has more than one flavor, you have a duplication of the from this image and the build time for each of these flavors. It's only that, it's duplication of work. So the idea is to say InitRAMFS allows us to separate the RAM disk image, the Debian installer, from the actual kernel. We create two CPIO archives, and when we finally build the kernel that will be used on the CD, we just cut them together to have a single wall which will be used without needing to rebuild. So this allows also to build, for example, the Debian installer image, we build them daily, or the RC1 or the RC2, etc. We build them in their own time. On the other hand, we will be able to build the kernel part of the image when there is a kernel update. No need to rebuild them every time. And if we can keep also various versions of the kernel, for example, the one used by RC1 will be kept, and we make a new one for RC2, they will be able to live both of them in the archive and to make allow us a more flexibility. This will mean also we can make more flavors available on CD or other stuff, so that we don't waste as many space. Okay. The other idea, which is also very, very controversial, which was my position from the start, and what I propose, is the build of the kernel modules for Debian installer to integrate them in the Linux kernel image, so that we have one single package to generate the kernel image, the modules, or the kernel image, and the Debian installer module components. Okay. The Debian installer team wants to keep control over that, so they can do things. It hinders, and it's one of the reasons why there is a delay in making upgrades. The proposal is that we integrate them in the kernel team, and we work closely with the Debian installer team to make modifications that they need, and it should be no major problem. So the second point, which is more the other, it's, we can do it with the current Africa infrastructure. This point we have here needs change to the Debian archive, the way we handle it. The idea is to have, right now we have a pool where each package is, and separately we have a second pool where the Debian installer components live, and well, that's it. So we cannot play many things. The idea is to have the normal package all in the archive, like we have now, but the kernel image to separate them out and have them inside a separate pool for each kernel version. So you can say, I use Debian with a 2.6.18 kernel and have two pools, two lines in the apt sources, and, well, that's the point situation we have now.
Yeah.
I just finish my sentence and I come to you. And then later, if you prepare, if you are, for example, before the release and which have a choose between two kernel versions, you can prepare both, have them running in parallel, and once the time is right, do the choice between the two. Or in case of upgrades, or this will allow for also some testing, more experimental kernel in a better way than now. Yeah, you had a question?
Well, this relates very much to an idea that has been circulating for a while, which would be that Edge R1 provides a newer kernel, and Edge R2 provides another newer kernel.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, if we have Edge R5, we're going to have six different kernel versions.
No, not necessarily, because we have more than one kernel. We have two, three, maybe some. But since we are flexible, we have them outside of the archive, we can just change the kernel used by pointing to the pool for the kernel version we choose, and say, but we maintain three or four kernel versions. We keep them, and once we say this one we'll deprecate, we'll never use, we just drop them, and it's easy. So we have a window of version, maybe three or something like that, but not five or more.
Well, okay, three doesn't matter. But you said, first of all, outside of the archive, I don't think that's going to fly with a lot of users. And then the other thing is, have you talked to the security team about this?
Okay, here there is one point. There is two ideas. I have mentioned the ideas publicly. I have not specifically spoken to the security team yet. We are speaking about the unstable archive and the testing archive. So that's not the stable release. So the stable release, we can also benefit from some duplication of the kernel versions, but it will be maybe two, the original one, and 1 year later the upgrade only. So that is something that has been a long-standing discussion between the kernel team and the security team, and I think the idea, there is some consensus that we want to do at least one kernel refresh in the middle. So this idea allows us to do that easily. But in with regard to the security team, it doesn't change anything if you do it this way or the other way. Second is the aim of this change is to make the development easier. So in unstable, there is no security team. In testing, there is, but the main of this thing will happen in unstable or experimental. So there is no impact.
Okay.
Yes? Any follow-up question?
Just quickly, I don't want to hold up your talk at all, but you said outside of the main archive. Consider a way somehow to have it inside, and if that involves what we did for 2.6.16 or something,
no,
like branch the source package.
The idea is to have in dists instead of having main, and like we have main normally, and we have main Debian installer, we have main kernel 2.6.18 and main kernel something. So it's inside the archive, but a separate pool. Which when I first heard some many years back about the pool system, I took, oh nice, we have separate pools which have individually contained package groups which we can easier, but it's different what happened. Yes?
From the stable release team's point of view, we decided that, or we said that we will have a look on a new kernel 6 months after Edge was released, and then maybe, depending on how much it would break stale, add one more kernel 9 to 10 to 12 months after release of Edge.
Okay, but that is, you take this decision with in mind
yes.
the current situation, and what I propose here is some plan which can do, because there are way to do it, which will allow to do easier team, maybe influence the choice, maybe make, say, we have one official kernel and we can propose, I don't know, a monthly upgrade or something, which is not really security maintained or differently,
no.
or have the testing kernel in the stable. Which
we spoke to the security team about that, and they would be willing if it's only one or two additional packages. Otherwise, they will decline it.
What does it mean, two or three additional packages? If it's
kernel.
Just
no,
yeah.
No. We didn't it for start
it's
because it was like
was
UDEV and MP and
yeah.
all that stuff, and that would have broken too much. So, we
yeah.
to
so in this kernel archive, we will naturally have to include the out of three modules and the UDEV and others. My hope, but I can't promise it because I'm not in UDEV, is that the UDEV situation will get less crazy than it has been in the past. It's my strong hope, and maybe if that doesn't happen, well, the right way is to well, not use UDEV, but something else which is more stable. Well, but
I like UDEV.
So where was I? So this allows us to have a stable testing on stable archive and switch. Okay, stable testing on stable, which each points to one kernel version, a subpool, and we can easily switch between them with a way which needs yet to be fine and everything, but which can be easily done. This also allows Debian installer media to include kernel material only for the given flavor we support, so we can make smaller Debian installer images. This also making custom kernel Debian installer much easier. It will be trivial. We simply integrate the pool of the custom image inside the IE and it's done. We have Debian installer. This allows, in particular, to do Debian installer image with for non-free without what Joy has said. If we are going to support a free and a non-free Debian installer, well, we will have 6 months of testing before it is done. Now, we will be able to have test Debian installer with a kernel And when you upgrade a kernel, there is only a small set of changes which are needed, changes which need to be testing and not a whole test. And this will allow to have the normal kernel installer image and include the non-free in the same build. So we just separate the non-free modules on top of it, and it's easy, it's integrated. Well, this allows stable upgrades of the kernel in a much easier way. So that's up to me here, my presentation. I have other points. Which I wanted to mention, but I didn't have time since I broke my laptop to make them nice. There was one point which is important for me, and will speak to you verbally about it. We have to improve the way the configuration file of the kernel are handled between kernel upgrade. Right now, that was one of the improvements. Instead of having one configuration file per architecture, per sub-architecture and per flavor, which was a mess, we already have an arborescence which has the common configuration options, and then each architecture has its own configuration files, like each flavor and sub-architecture, etc. So we are able to say this option is common to every Debian kernel, and on PowerPC, for example, this one will be changed, and on 64-bit PowerPC, we change this one. This was a huge improvement. But there are two things that happened. Is when you make an upgrade to a newer version, there are new kernel configuration options which are added, and which we need to check, which right now will go transparently. It will set the default and not tell us. And it has an influence also on the modules which are built, which has an influence on the Debian installer module UDEP built. Because if a module is not built, we have to modify the kernel configuration to not build it, or change name or something. And then in the Debian installer kernel module UDEP build, you have to modify also a file to say this module, we don't include it or it changes name. So one improvement that is needed is to make an automated way which will automatically parse the configuration file of the kernel and the kconfig, the configuration configuration files. In the kernel, I'll say, right from last the kernel package version to the new one, this option change. And this option that change, be careful, because the module X that was built, it now isn't built anymore. So it has a repercussion on the Debian UDEP, the kernel, the Debian installer module, because we don't include it. And this can all be automated to a degree and not need a loss of time of maybe 1 week before we can have a new kernel version. Then the second thing is the problem of the non-free firmware, which can be easily integrated, like I said before, into this setup, be having a separate archive in non-free for the non-free firmware or the non-free drivers, which can be added to the Debian installer image and easily buildable. And we also have an easier handling of experimental kernels, or I build my kernels alone inside the Debian infrastructure, so it creates a point there. It does everything like an official one. We can build Debian installer image from it, and handling this up. I just come to questions. So.
Kernel images are now, official kernel images are now buildable by buildies.
Official kernel images are buildable by buildies.
So if you upload to experimental, they will get it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's experimental, I don't like experimental how it is working, because experimental is a mess. There, a Lambda Debian user say, oh, I will test this kernel in experimental. It's put experimental in the upline, and it make an upgrade, and we upgrade glibc or whatever.
It won't
anymore, but there is some.
It
has done that sometime. It happened to me, so
then,
yes.
Then you pinned up completely.
It was long time ago. It happened to me. Maybe change a bit. The second thing is that in the way we are going to do that, we will not have this experimental kernel in the experimental pool, but in a kernel pool, which is not, for the version which we not as experimental.
But that might help, for example, because we also doing recompiles with newer versions of GCC and so on. So we could also see what happens if we recompile a kernel with a.
Yeah, so you can. Yeah, but that is inside each of the pools. Pool maybe, but I don't know. I'm not very familiar in the build environment, so that could be an idea. Other questions? Yes.
How much work do you think switch to incremental Unitramfs setup does require?
For the Unitramfs? Maybe. Okay. I wanted to have a test sample here, but I didn't manage to find time. I don't think it will be huge because you can right now without any modification. Yes. You take the Debian installer infrastructure and you go into package list on each of the package and you remove the Debian the kernel modules from it. So it will build the image without any kernel modules. So that is maybe what 1 hour if you look at that and take a lot of time to be sure and have a slow machine. Then you have to build images which build only the kernel version. This is something that takes a bit more time, but it's trivial in reality. Someone which already knows the Debian installer infrastructure can do it in maybe what a day or something like that. Then the third part, and there is something still to be needed and choice to be made, is how do you inside the kernel image you have to join the two together before giving it to the user. Ideally, we could modify the bootloaders to have not only one RAM disk but two or more, and then we just feed them and it will be the ideal situation. But right now we need to cut them together, and that's, I don't think it's huge amount of work. That's for the easy version. Now, if we go beyond that and build the kernel, the modules from the kernel image that we have done in parallel, there are other ideas beyond which are more complicated, which allow to have more fine-tuned picking of the kernel UDEPs that is available right now. To say, well, right now, for example, you have all the serial ATA or all the ID modules together, or all the network modules together, maybe in three package, but on your board, well, you have one serial card, one Ethernet device, so you don't need the driver for 10 or 20 things. So there can be evolution being done in order to help system with long memory. There is a counterweight to that, is that the Debian installer how it works right now, it has problems with the reading huge package file, which is also one point I address with this per version thing, and we could have per version and per flavor, so that the Debian installer will be able to load only the module which are for this sub-architecture, not others, and for this version, for this hardware. That will be more work, but already from the first step, we can benefit. And for the first step, that's for the Debian installer, the Unitramfs, I think the big work for this, what I propose, will be from the FTP master and archive side. So the right idea is to experiment it in a separate archive outside, show it works, and then present the idea to FTP master for integration to Debian, or not, if they don't like it. Yes?
How long will Debian support really PowerPC and everything? Because I have a lot of PowerBooks at home and Macintoshes, and at work we are using similar boards like this one. Mm-hmm. But I would like to have also something, maybe Debian install more for embedded systems to see, as you told, maybe even without graphics, because we have no graphics, for instance.
Okay, there are two questions here. The first one is, what about Debian installer, the Debian support for PowerPC, because there was some huge controversy of which I was strongly involved, like you might know. I had hoped to find transport and others here and discuss with them. They don't like it, right? It's their choice. I don't think Debian will drop port PC anytime soon, because we have 68K is still kept. Debian port PC is the, one of the main architectures. There is still hardware being installed. We had the power, the PlayStation 3, which supported down at the boot. So there is no fear that Debian will drop from PC. Second, the question is, what is going on with the Debian Scholar team on the Power PC side? I took my distance from them. I had hope to discuss with them. We'll see what happens. But my personal engagement is, if there is some problems with the official Debian archive or the Debian installer team, I will personally fork Debian or the archive or the parts which are blocked and provide to you, the PowerPC user, Debian which will work on it. But I hope it doesn't come to that. It can also be done inside Debian, the same, but well, that's the Debian installer team which does itself and we propose an alternative. Or, but my personal opinion, there is no reason that the dispute continues and that it continues to affect you. We will see.
So you answered Ben even a third question.
Yes? Yes?
From the release team side of you,
Me?
Hmm? No, for him. It will be that at the beginning of Lenny, all architects need to re-qualify themselves to be release architects for them. So like we did for Edge, for all architectures, the same will happen for them as well, with more or less the same criteria. So that's, I think that will also happen with Lenny plus one and so on. So as long as he's
there's a user base and the developer base, it will continue. I think it was also good for me to take a distance because it allows other PowerPC interested developers to take place and come and kind of relieve me, because at the end many people were saying, oh, Sven does a lot, so let's work on other things. And that was also that caused some of the problems we had. Yes, other questions? Oh, in 5 minutes? Well, I must be finished, so...
In a break, and then it's Martin Mittelmann running Debian on inexpensive storage devices.